You are listening to Nighttime Daydreams with DJ Toan K on Spirit Plants Radio, broadcasting around the world at spiritplantsradio.com. Turn on, tune in, and visit us on the web at spiritplantsradio.com for schedules, playlists, archives, and more. Today I'm going to be reading to you from the Senecal, number 100, June 2017, which actually came out in October 2017, which is fine. I'm going to dip into here and find some literature and possibly play some music or something like that, something more or less closely resembling. Music, I don't know. Whatever you call it. If punk rock is music, then twanging on mouth harps is music. Patrick Jean Frank. A couple of haikus here. A turtle attempting to cross I-26. Lost in a dream, but we could not stop. A turtle attempting to cross I-26. Lost in a dream. But we could not stop. Buried in paperwork, I feel the need for the hawk, the mountain, the slanted light. Buried in paperwork, I need the feel of the hawk, the mountain, the slanted light. I wonder why at this moment I feel peace and the cicadas are singing deep inside. I wonder why at this moment I feel peace and the cicadas are singing deep inside. Raymond Solar Jr., Notes from New England. The following is a version of some of the events that occurred to me back in 1997, the first year I tried LSD. I've recently dived into many of my old notebooks, trying to dig into daylight again who I was back then, let old pages reveal anew how my path has shifted and shifted again and again. Because of my experiences that year, I was near 34 years old when my psychedelic adventures began on April 5th, 1997. Again, Raymond Solard begins with a quotation. Rather, God is everything that exists, though everything that exists is not God. It is present in everything, and everything comes into being from it. Nothing is devoid of its divinity. Everything is within it. It is within everything and outside of everything. There is nothing but it. That's from the Essential Kabbalah. Daniel C. Matt, editor, 1995. Yesterday, after a long, exhausting week of bookseller work, I had jury duty, picked to be on the jury for an assault and kidnapping case, despite my protests, but then dismissed, free to leave, escape the minions of state power manifested. So last night I celebrated with a dollar a glass Portugee red wine at my current favorite bar dive, Eddie's Place in Cambridge, in the wood-paneled back room pumping the jukebox with quarters to hear Leonard Skinner's Sweet Home Alabama, Bob Seger's Like a Rock, The Who, Aerosmith, Tom Petty, and the like. Waiting for Rick. I remember thinking when I was 17 I still could have joined the race of men, but it didn't happen. My parents taught me nothing of the world and how to travel it well. Jenny smiled and turned me down, and so I sought love in a clumsy, stumbling way, each new encounter emphasizing my ignorance, my inadequacy, ever struggling with these old angers and woes, not knowing a way to salve them new. Mud, uncertainty, then, now. Rick finally came, and we escalated the red wine night higher and higher. He had a Jack Kerouac book to shout from, too, and there were dart boards on the wall to try. Higher and higher, and then a moment on snowy Carnell Street near my studio apartment in Zombie Town, long and dark but for the occasional street lamp, deserted buildings, when he kneeled and kissed the pavement, praising everything. He then reclined back in a small hill of snow, like a drunken winter king, and asked me if I live in faith or doubt, and demanded that I kneel too and praise everything, so I did. All is well and divine, he cried, to the strange, quiet, mysterious street. We lay later in my studio apartment, him on my old beat futon, me on my old beat mattress, talking of death, deciding neither of us was at peace enough or ready for it. He told me he was visiting his friend Hartley the next evening in Milkrose, the richer town next to Zombie Town, and I should come and meet him too, some kind of crazy psychedelic visionary. So today I saw David Cronenberg's film Crash, a really fucked up movie about sex and car crashes, like David Lynch's Lost Highway, but even harsher. Now headed for Hartley's house, wondering what drugs will be taken and what experiences will come. Just took acid. Notes. Nothing yet. High is high. No other. There is no we. There is no I. Pages of poetry, all blank. There is no here. The night went on forever. I'll never forget it to my last day. I was with safe people. Hartley's face changing skin color, Caucasian to Latin to black, back and forth. His desktop computer screen scaring me. Grateful Dead music for hours, making sense now. The tribalism of their shows, people traveling with their tours for months on end, part of a new kind of community. I can barely imagine. Hartley's happy memories of these tours back in the 1970s. The music as something sacred and spiritual and beautiful and fun in the heart of it all. Hartley loves the lyrics to the Dead song Eyes of the World. Wake up to find out that you are the eyes of the world. The heart has its beaches, its homeland, and thoughts of its own. Wake now. Discover that you are the song that the morning brings. But the heart has its seasons, its evenings, and songs of its own. I made it through, I think. Late on, Hartley reading aloud from trashy bestsellers for our entertainment. Rick smiling mysteriously, looking both dead and alive. Night ending by mutual consent. Early morning, sleep. I was and am grateful to these two men in a unique and perpetual way. They saw me safely through the door. So we may come back to this, but there's a lot here to read. Tamara Miles, How to Draw the Earth. Draw a candle within a circle, a match with which to light the candle, a man holding the match, woman blowing out the match, dog on a rug observing. The dog jumps up and runs around in the circle, knocks the woman down, the man confused, chaos, darker. Scratch the pencil across the page, heavy lines swirling, circle on fire. Water to put it out, more water. Let your thoughts be blue, blue-green, algae, coral reef. On the shoreline, houses. You inside one, a temporary dwelling, drawing by candlelight, an earth-like planet. Dog outside leaps through water. Jellyfish, shark, whale, octopus, Amelia Earhart's plane landing, circling, looking for a place to land, a desert island, an SOS. Over there, a glacier or two, mountain, wise man at the top using his last match to build a fire. Warm your hands. Tamara Miles again, not the pilot, but a drone. My friend has prostate cancer. He's depressed. Today, I cover his English class. A person who has never had cancer, like a person who has never been gay or homeless or has never been shot down in a plane over Iraq and ended up missing an arm and a leg or has never divorced or had an affair or been born a Muslim, a Mormon, or a Jew, cannot possibly understand the associated conflicts. His father was a pilot. He's from a small town, loves his wife and his dog. He's a damn fine poet, a loyal friend. On certain nights, we've gotten drunk and listened to Dylan Thomas's sonorous voice go on and on about a girl who should never fear, never fear the wolf in country sleep. I've had precancerous cells, a biopsy or two, procedures, my cervix removed for good measure in the hysterectomy, but I didn't lose my curly hair, spend days with my bald head over the toilet, pray that South Carolina would, for God's sake, legalize medical marijuana so I could get an appetite. But I have experienced profound depression, with its sickening reckoning, a tidal wave of constant sorrow. so that it's hard to breathe, much less go to work, or give anybody the love he or she deserves. After 9/11, the wife of a man captured by camera as he tumbled through the air from one of the towers was furious at the suggestion he jumped. He would never commit suicide, she claimed. She has never, I bet, felt the brutal heat and threat of burn, lungs full of smoke and chemicals, people screaming, dying, all around her an apocalypse, and found herself before a window where, thank God, thank the angels, there is oxygen, crisp, clear, magnificent O2. If my friend ever needs oxygen, I pray he gets it in abundance. Having never had to hold my breath for the latest news about whether I will live or die, my job is not to empathize, but to remember we can't smoke near the tank. For now, I'll grade his papers and breathe in, breathe out. Never, my darling, fear the wolf who threatens to huff and puff and blow the house down. This house is made of strong brick. Smoke goes on rising from the chimney. My friend's plane takes off. Tamara Miles. Unnatural. You sound hoarse, said the ear, nose, and throat doctor as he examined my broken nose, the result of my automobile curling off the road into a concrete culvert around 5 a.m. when I was too sleepy to be driving and my face hit the steering wheel, or maybe the windshield, I don't remember, but the blood flowed until a nice man came out of his house and told me to hold my head back and squeeze my nostrils and try to be calm, and I clutched the hand towel in which the blood had pooled itself into the shape of a small island. But anyway, no, this is my regular voice, I said to the doc then, embarrassed, but he would have none of it. Said he'd better take a look, open wide. I was obedient. Wow, he said, you have 2 exactly matching compressions on your vocal cords. He continued, I guess you're right, I guess this is just the way you were born. Wouldn't it be nice if it could be that way for everybody? Just a quick listen to the vocal cords, a quick look down your throat, would make it perfectly clear that this is just the way you were born. Jimmy Heffernan and the Newosphere's Collective Consciousness on Earth. I'm going to sing a little bit of this. If one accepts the notion that there is a non-local consciousness, that the non-local correlations discovered by quantum mechanics are in fact real and constitute a kind of suffusing matrix or network of connections between every point and every other point in the universe and potentially also the multiverse, then it is not a stretch to assume that there is a collective mind operating on Earth. Next, Colin James, Obtuse Traditionalism. There is something huge living under my tool shed. Flattened down grass precedes a cavern-like entrance. No sightings yet, although my neighbor has seen the bushes move. His vigilance is encouraging, and the motion detector I had installed. We may have pictures soon to inundate the internet, speaking into a microphone, of course. The entrance gives off an odor of musk, some gland or fistula gone rampant. It keeps the curious away, who pester in theoretical camouflage. An expert has predicted a sinkhole down there, that ancient river running beneath all of us. Her idea is to descend when stability is finally confirmed, and facilitate an historical provenance. Colin James, Unusual Obsessions and Their Correct Pronunciations. My father, the avid cyclist, attempted to ride around the earth on his bike, backwards. It got a bit tricky climbing the Alps. Right of way confused him. His hand signals, in turn, shocked the Hague. shared the road with the less devout, the better parade. He had neck surgery in Poland. His profile forever changed. He began to resemble Mr. Potato Head. Despondent, he jumped off the largest single-arch bridge in the world. It was the way down he craved. Hartley's Righteous Rants. But the heat came round and busted me for smiling on a cloudy day. Quotation from The Grateful Dead, The Other One, 1968. LSD and state power. Oh, LSD, old chum. They hate you and fear you. They use weapons and torture and all manner of warfare against you. The war on drugs is all about you. You're the drug in sex, drugs, and rock and roll. You're that thing, that undefinable force, that substance so powerful and threatening to the mainstream world, that a war on innocent civilians, indeed, even on their own families, must be waged ad infinitum. Coercing a person into selling a hit of acid to an agent, which results in that person spending decades in prison, is totally sick and disgusting. This happened recently at the Firefly Music Festival in Delaware and at the Locken Festival in Virginia, among many others, but it's been happening countless times for decades. Why? How many innocent lives would be destroyed by the powers of the state in a needless and disgustingly criminal attempt to control the minds of the governed? In blatant violation of our inalienable rights to liberty, why is LSD worth the state destroying promising young lives over a single dose? Why coerce some kid into taking $5 for something he wanted to give you for free? Because those in charge need an enemy within to create and to justify and to sustain a police state. Best to pick a popular item to eradicate, like table salt, or styrofoam, or CO2, or light bulbs, or LSD. This way it's nothing personal, it's the LSD they want. But if you are the person containing the LSD, then suffer all pains of hell, because the state says the thing is a crime unto itself, and therefore you are a criminal as an accessory to the existence of the thing itself, unless it is in the custody of the state, in which case it's completely fine. Judy Haggai. Magnolia petals silently fall. New phase of beauty. Between the spaces, all that cannot be said. A life of its own. Today, tomorrow, such lovely abstractions. The breath is now. Magnolia petals silently fall. New phase of beauty. Between the spaces, all that cannot be said. A life of its own. Today, tomorrow, such lovely abstractions. This breath is now. Algernon Beagle, writing Bag's End, book number 6, The Grand Scheme of Liberation, Grand Finally. Hello, cynical readers. My name is Algernon Beagle, and I am the editor guy for Bag's End News. Bag's End News is a newspaper about my homeland, a fantasy land called Bag's End. From the outside, Bag's End looks like three brown-colored paper laundry bags piled up on a little chair in the corner of our friend Miss Chris's bedroom in Connecticut. Miss Chris is 5 years old and has a toy, tall boy brother named Ramey. Who is 17. Inside Bag's End is sort of like an apartment building of levels, but outside, because it is a fantasy land, nobody knows about its top or bottom. Most levels look like regular hallways with doors to rooms and other places running up and down their lengths. Each level is connected to the one above and the one below by ramps that are good for folks with legs and others without. Strangely, the other end of each level ends in a sudden edge, so be warned should you come to visit. Okay, I gotta skip forward here. Algernon. Thanks, Algernon. Those were the days, my friend, we thought they'd never end. We'd sing and dance forever and a day. We'd live the life we'd choose, we'd fight and never lose, for we were young and should have our Tom Sheehan, Photos at Low Tide. Shoreline crows claim to own low tidal flats. Gulls cry for mercy. Flats like vistas under glass show off clouds rich as bread pans. A single green buoy, light on rocks, dares mark the channel. Erect sail masts wait upon mistress winds, nowhere to go, nothing to do. High porch bound, caught up with crows, I'm inside out of self, pulling for gulls. Clambering, writing a poem when the mountain isn't moving, is the art. Okay, I'm going to skip over my text. Ace Bages, prison view. Bages? Bages? Ace, if you're listening to this, how do you pronounce your name, man? Just, you know, send me a Facebook message. Bogges, how do you pronounce that? Interactive. Dear listener, figure it out. Ace, that's easy. Ace. Prison view. First moon in 5 months, full outside my window at the Martinsburg Correctional Center, where I've just arrived, 6 hours from my former jail home. Same spare walls, spiritless meals, but new clothes and a new view. A field of short grass, scrub and dirt, like a nature preserve in Kenya. Vast, unreachable sky. Few stars and moon. I cling to that great dot in the hardest nights of hardest days. It warms me with love, like a faded, broken valentine. Swears, I'll see you again. I'll wait for you. I will. One more time. Prison view. First moon in 5 months. Full outside my window at the Martinsburg Correctional Center, where I've just arrived 6 hours from my former jail home. Same spare walls, spiritless meals, but new clothes and a new view. A field of short grass, scrub and dirt, like a nature preserve in Kenya. Vast, unreachable sky, few stars and moon. I cling to that great dot in these hardest nights of hardest days. It warms me with love, like a faded, broken valentine. Swears, I'll see you again. I'll wait for you. I will. Ace Bages. Bages. Ace. Just call him Ace. The prisoner's gospel. Blessed are the broken, for they carry their justification with them like a union card. Blessed are the first offenders, for theirs is the kingdom of second chances. Blessed are the unloved, for they shall suffer only for themselves. Blessed are the flight risks, for they still have places to go. Rejoice in influenza, medicated, sleeping away the days. But woe unto he who has learned to hope, for his eyes are stained glass windows in a crypt, and woe unto husbands who see their wives remembering life without them, yes, and blessed are the broken, and woe unto the broken, and rejoice in the breaking, for such men find peace in their pieces, rebuild themselves, a monument with scars, a book of the word with shattered spine, duct tape keeping its guts from the cold stone floor. Freedom, the color of midnight, clear and quiescent, scented with riverbanks, seed heads, tall grass, life. Its touch is as a woman's, impassioned and safe, as the sulfur skull of a foot-long match, yet sometimes chilly as a lake wind, and covering everything like dust. It tastes, too, like charred bacon, cherries, and molasses. A man would certainly swallow it whole if he knew its bottle had a bottom after all. One more time. Freedom, the color of midnight, clear and quiescent, scented with riverbanks, seed heads, tall grass, life. Its touch is a woman's, impassioned and safe as the sulfur skull of a foot-long match, yet sometimes chilly as a lake wind, and covering everything with dust. It tastes, too, like charred bacon, cherries, and molasses. A man would certainly swallow it whole if he knew its bottom, if he knew its bottle had a bottom after all. Charlie Bayer, prostate panic. Continued from Seneca 99. Now the days of winter dark, the shuffling around with red holes oozing, the knowing that the life of the past is evaporated, but longing for the normalcy of a girlfriend. Though a gastrointestinal cripple, I become manic to come up with a girlfriend. In the popular cyberspace haunts of the lonely hearths, I slash through like a machete in the jungle, using the pictures of my summery healthy days and the words of a partially disinterested and disenfranchised poet. It is not long before I have 10 conversations going. But I can't stand it. So many flaws. Here I am, Mr. Flaw himself, Captain Impotent, but I want the perfect woman, the one with raving beauty, brains to bury a Swarthmore graduate, wit to stand up against Woody Allen, adventure coursing through her veins to shame Laura Croft. Where is she? She sure as hell is not in this cyber cesspool of secretaries and DVD junkies. They are fat, they are ugly, but mostly they are stupid. They don't understand what the hell I'm talking about, if anything. They say nothing interesting. It's all about an endlessly connected gene pool of other boring white trash morons. Cousin Claude did this. Sister Canker said that about it. Auntie Asshole decided not to see Claude or Canker, etc., etc. So I asked them, do you think that dark energy really exists? Do you think that it is the real reason for the 100 billion light-year hole in the universe that is devoid of all galaxies? What's a galaxy? Didn't Ford make a car like that in the 70s? My uncle Camshaft had a galaxy, and him and Wanda Wetwood, blah, blah, blah. I absolutely can't stand it. So now that I have severed my sex life from the future of my existence, I seek to find some other intellectual lady with the icy sex drive of a roofing nail in winter. I see these over-intellectual types on the Brainiac sites. True to form, they have no more desire for sex than for a gasoline milkshake. The problem is that I am some sort of crossover between brains and earthly derring-do. The Brainiacs see me as a dirtbag because I lack such things as a university position, or any position at all for that matter. Why am I living out in the sticks? Is it a witness protection thing? Ergo, am I a drug dealer? So I can hardly get past a few emails before I say something stupid about the sociological benefits of gangs or the empowerment of women in Southeast Asia through prostitution. They are all so trigger-happy to eject me back into the void over something I had hoped would lead to a quality conversation. After a few months of this, I've had enough. All the hoses are unplugged for me, and the crimson lines are not weeping mystery snot anymore. My sister has taken over a neighbor's house, and her adult children have heard that there was a free hangout here. The place fills with her clan of dirtbags. She rarely comes to see me in my little cabin on the side of the hill. It's just me and my schizophrenic cat, just the four walls and a computer full of fat, stupid people. Killing myself seems like an intelligent option, except for the fact that I've spent all this money getting hacked up by the AMA prostate machine. Not that I feel so very obligated to make Dr. Hack's BMW patient payments. It just seems so illogical. I feel obligated to stay alive for my kids who never contact me, who don't even know how I languish in loneliness. Just think how it would impact their lives if the father they don't know and never answer disappeared. Might cause some questioning thoughts a couple times a year. Wouldn't want to be responsible for that. But if I was going to off myself, why would I have taken this ignominious route? Why not the route of excessive drugs, womanizing, and debauchery? Hell, I could destroy every part of my system with white powders, rob everyone I know to support the powder supply, catch any possible disease and transmit it wholesale, drive recklessly, invoke fights with huge tattooed ex-cons, and, if I had all that fun, beat the cancer to the grave. Damn, I must be a moron to pass up such an opportunity. What the fuck am I going to do now? Be a nutless cower case doing some kind of goody-goody nice-ass job where I help illegal immigrants get more free cars and clothes? Maybe I could be the lunch menu coordinator in a women's rape shelter with a laugh-at-me sign on my back. I'm getting pretty sick of this living shit. Doesn't seem to be much in it for me. Then, the last shred of serendipity in the universe falls on my table like a fish thrown from the 7th-story window. She writes me, thinks my profile says some clever crap, wants to inquire about my theory that God is a cyclic mathematical manifestation. She's beautiful, dark-haired, piercing gypsy eyes, obviously well-proportioned and under the weight limit of an interstate truck. Hell, she is a modern mountain bike in a parking lot of 70s Dodge vans. I have to play this one carefully. Can't jerk the line. Must loosen the drag tensioner on the reel. Let her have line if she needs it. A few intellectual emails later and we arrange to meet at a coffee shop. I can now go a few hours without pissing in my pants, so must be ready. But why the hell am I doing this anyway? I'm no more sexual than a left turn sign shot to hell on the road sign. But I think maybe she is the one to appreciate me, to stick with me, to help me love again, to grow with me, to become more of a man than I used to be. Maybe she is the one I have seen in 100 dreams for 30 years. Her dark hair, her fixing eyes. Dickless or not, it's worth a shot. Not being the one to go into detail about my private life, I will exclude the details of our slow but budding romance. Suffice it to say that we go through most of the travails of any couple getting to know one another, plus a variety of others not normally on the menu, those caused by my particular condition. Naturally, she is not without psychological damage, thankfully to match my own, as nobody seems to get to this regenerative age without what is commonly known as baggage. But what a delight it is to be able to work through it and around this pile of fetid suitcases, to be able to drag some luggage out into the backyard and burn it. For this, for the fact that she has a full book of matches, I am eternally grateful. But what of it? What of the question about how can a displaced megalomaniac satisfy a beautiful woman when words are not enough? I go after my options with a gusto of the family dog on the Thanksgiving table. I feel ashamed around my beautiful girlfriend. I respond to her affections entirely in kind, but where there should be a rock-hard bulge below the belly, there is only rubber. How can she know that she excites me? How can I show her my burning love and lust? How does she know that her administrations produce the desired effect? How long before she stops these affections in exasperation? My girlfriend is an angel. She tells me that everything is fine, that it is of no consequence, that all that I do excites her. Things are okay. I know she is lying, but she does it so very well. I love her for lying so well. I will do anything to make things right. I am told to wait by the doctor. All will be all right. I don't want to wait. Not another 32 seconds. I'm told to wait for my erection nerve to regenerate. The nerve that tells the penis to fill with blood. The controller nerve. There used to be two, but Dr. Hack and others unanimously told me that the nerves are conduits for the cancer cells from inside the prostate to the body interior. So those nerves that are closest to the cancer need to be hacked out. In any case, the nerve on the right side had such qualifications. So let me stop here for a second to do. You are listening to Nighttime Daydreams with DJ Tuan K on Spirit Plants Radio, broadcasting around the world at spiritplantsradio.com. Turn on, tune in, and visit us on the web at spiritplantsradio.com for schedules, playlists, archives, and more. We are currently going through Prostate Panic by Charlie Bayer. Continued from Cynical 99. Prostate Panic by Charlie Bayer. I'm told to wait by the doctor. All will be all right. I don't want to wait. Not another 32 seconds. I'm told to wait for my erection nerve to regenerate. The nerve that tells my penis to fill with blood. The controller nerve. There used to be two, but Dr. Hack and others unanimously told me that the nerves are conduits for the cancer cells from inside the prostate to the body interior. So those nerves that are closest to the cancer need to be hacked out. In any case, the nerve on the right side had such qualifications. These things are as fine as spider hair. To touch them means damage. Known among dick doctors as the veil of Aphrodite, they're best described as a single sheet of wet toilet paper stuck on a rough rock. To peel one off the prostate and hurl the latter is no small feat. It seemed then like the difficulty of some doctor trying to look up a hole between your balls and your asshole, then using his stubby fingers to pry the veil off. It sounded next to impossible. Now I wonder if some gut craftsman might not have been more gentle with this nerve of all importance. I'm thinking that Dr. Hack hosed me. I can envision him now, those many months ago, feverishly working the controls on Robbie the robot, hurrying to get on to the afternoon tennis game. His hand is on a big black knob with the little lines and numbers for the positions of reverse and overdrive. Dr. Hack is jacking it in all directions, making vroom, vroom noises unconsciously. The excitement is energizing to be excavating his margin around the marble-sized cancer, mucking a cavity the size of a football that includes half my bladder. That includes every miscellaneously connected mini-organ that ever secreted anything. He really gets excited while scraping the saved nerve off the prostate, cramming the gear in reverse and stomping the gas, then double-clutching and peeling out into second gear the other way. I might as well be getting mined with a backhoe. All the while, Robbie's whirling shred-o-matic arms are blending my organs for pumping out through a half-inch hose. Although I was out colder than a block of ice, my body was still awake. It knew it was being drawn and quartered. It was contracting and squirming to get out of the way of the meat cleaver robot. When I finally awoke, my hands were all racked out of position, deep muscle pulling around my thumbs and wrists. I was fighting my bonds unconsciously to escape. One of my eyes was nearly blind from blood pressure, and a tooth had been split in half from the extreme clenching, split to the root. No amount of whiskey would cure it. It had to be jerked out by the $200 Mexican dentist. I fear the collusion of Dr. Hack and Robbie has done a twin towers on my erection nerves. One tower is destroyed, that much is sure. The other is laying flat on the ground. What miracle will it take to re-excite this with electricity? I'm told that if you don't get a boner within 2 years, you're toast. You'll never get one again. I was told that I had a 60% chance of re-bonerating. Now, these months later, I'm getting pretty damn nervous. I can't stand not having a boner. It is the one defining thing that make all men male. All the blood draining from our brain and filling this insatiable pogo stick that has us hopping around to its whim. I just love being that stupid. Viagra does nothing. The neural disconnection is too great. Produces a headache and makes my face all flushed. Great. Boner face. Maybe if it gives me the Pinocchio nose, I could do something with that. But no, just the effects of a mild fever. The flopper stays flapping. Nothing. At $10 a pill, this is a bit of an expensive experiment. So I go online and order from Canada at one-third the price. Takes about a month, and then a package arrives from India. a couple dozen identical pills, except they don't have Pfizer stamped on them. Eat one. Less effect than the real McCoy. Obviously stepped on by some backyard chemist with baby laxative. Eat two, then three. My face looks like a boiled Scottish alcoholic, and my vision is blurred 70%, but still no wood. Where is the wood? Wood that I could get some wood. Shit. Dr. Hack proudly boasts that he can give a dead man a hard-on. His favorite is the implanted air inflation boner machine, operated, I suppose, by a switch on your hip. One must use caution to not bump the elevator doors, lest you accidentally activate and impale two or three people in the confined space. I reject that option wholesale. They chop you away and replace you with android parts? No. Getting too far afield. Who wants to rely on energizer batteries anyway? Dr. Hack is one sick puppy. He probably has some corpse in his living room with 20 inflatable penises on it. Likely plays Bach to the syncopated rising and falling of the ballet boners. Another is the pump. I know, we all think of some micro-dick guy with a goatee madly pumping away, trying to get from 3 inches to 4, not revealing that his Corvette reveals his penis length to the majority of women anyway. But I am instructed that it is all about blood. Get the blood into the afflicted member. This will cause healing. This will eventuate in natural boners. There are two kinds of pumps. The $600 medical pump, and the $60 porno store pump. The books will tell you that they are the same thing. The only difference is the price. At the next doctor's appointment, I get the whimpering doctor in a full Nelson. Give me a boner, doc. Gotta have it. Time's up. Don't let me down, or you'll be the guest cadaver at the chiropractic school. Take it easy. Take it easy. No problem. We can give a dead man a hard-on. 10 minutes, or you're the dead man. Okay. What you need is the erectile enhancement system. Sure, whatever. Enhance me. Well, they are pretty expensive, but you can get a similar thing at an adult store. Has the same enhancement effect. You mean a porno shop? Yeah, one of those places. Okay, doc, this better work. See you in 2 weeks. Check with the nurse to get set up the next appointment. I finally find a porn store on the edge of the Mormon city. It is disguised as a dry cleaner's. Pleasure's dry cleaning. Lingerie laundered. Books, DVDs, is what the sign outside says. They have a rear entrance. As always with these places, there is a tiny 20-something young lady working the counter. She is in some leather girdle garb with a studded neck collar and black spiked hair, but still a woman. How can I shop comfortably in here? Why don't they have some obvious male child molester at the counter? Then a person could feel comfortable in the perv's store, knowing that they are way more psychotic than you. A woman will always give you the disparaging look if you're trying to buy the Beach Butt Bingo DVD. Well, sure, Little Miss Spiky has seen every variety of deviants come through the door, but this is me. I'm embarrassed, way embarrassed. I tell myself that I will never see this person again in my life. What the hell? Go ahead and expose my inner secrets. I called earlier regarding an erectile enhancement product. A what? A penis extender? You mean a cock pump? Yeah, okay, one of those. She gives me the wry female smirk that I had been expecting. The one that says, ha ha, you have a tiny dick, motherfucker, and it will always be a joke. We women will always make fun of you. We have a wide variety of cock pumps, she says. Follow me. She leads me to a whole wall of multicolored apparatus. I don't know a thing about these. I only need it for medical reasons. Yeah, sure, mister. Which one do you recommend? For medical reasons, that is. Mister, I don't know about no medical reasons, but my husband uses this one, the Iron Man Destroyer. Why is this one superior? They all look pretty similar to me. Hell, I don't know. Makes your cock huge, that's why. Oh, okay, I'll take this one then. I'm bright red with embarrassment. I'm thinking she is interpreting it as being flushed by perversion, which makes me feel more embarrassed than red. The cock pump is iridescent blue and red. It has a squeeze bulb, as is found on marine fuel systems. How much? For you, for medical reasons, $65. You want cock rings with that? I'm not sure. Do I need them? Damn right. Keeps you hard. My husband Bruno gets hard as granite. And then you crack walnuts with it? Huh? Oh, nothing. Is that what you recommend? Hell, we got fuzz-colored cock rings with ticklers, adjustable cock rings, stud-colored cock rings, even cock rings that light up. Look at all these. Best assortment in the area. She is showing me a different wall covered in the things. I'll just take the plain one right there. It's adjustable, you know. Bruno uses one of these, too. The thing is big enough to slip on a coffee cup and keep the creamer from getting loose. I can't help but visualize Bruno with his leather vest and dog chain wagging an 18-inch member at this tiny, spiky Jack Mormon. I feel like I've inadvertently been pulled into a cheap porno movie, like some pierced pervert is suddenly going to come out of the back room and rape me. I got to get out of here. Now, what do I owe you? Want lubes with that? You mean lubricant? Yeah, lube. Bruno always uses lube. Do I need it? What do you have? I'm starting to wonder if Bruno isn't just a sales icon like the Geico lizard in that insurance commercial on TV. We have regular, sensual, duration, edible, and glow-in-the-dark. Bruno uses the sensual glow-in-the-dark. I visualize Darth Bruno Vader's lightsaber glowing in the shadowy back room, ready to spring out and slash us all into submission. An ugly thought. No thank you, no lube. Okay, suit yourself, that'll be $78.45. I hand over the credit card and almost forget to retrieve it. I can't get out of there fast enough with my wrinkly, undisclosing plastic bag. Bruno's boner bulger didn't work for shit. Got the goddamn thing home and set to work with it. The rubber gasket used to seal in the vacuum was designed for a porn star. I'm Captain Shrivel. I'm the 97-pound weakling who gets sand kicked in their face. I'm embarrassed to myself. My sad unit is so terrified of the world, so atrophied from disuse, that it's become horribly puny. Its minuscule girth lays in the gaping rubber hole like a dog with its head out the car window. Not gonna happen. I take the thing down to the shop and attempt to modify it by partially melting it with a torch, hose clamping it to a smaller diameter. The thing deforms and twists, and a gaping hole develops in one side. This I fill with silicone. Now it looks like some Mad Max version of the penile extender. Hose clamps and baling wire all over it. Clamp the thing on and set to work on the fuel pump bulb. A tiny vacuum starts, but is soon overwhelmed with a hissing and then farting noise of air sneaking back in to kill the vacuum. This is romantic. I could see doing this in front of the girlfriend. Or maybe I could just get insanely frustrated in the bathroom as Junior lays there like wilted romaine lettuce. I'd be frantically mashing the pump bulb, carrying the beat while the hissing and flatulence sing the chorus. Well, fuck this. Not working. Call the doctor's office. Want the goddamn $600 unit. Want the Cadillac of dick enlargement. Want to be a man again. Eventually, I get the Cadillac, and it works as it should. The thing is noisy and difficult. When all goes right, there's only a half-hour window to make enjoyment. This is while the member is in some deadly strangulation grip of a cruel rubber ring. I imagine myself as one of those long balloons that are twisted into the shapes of rabbits and dogs, their necks gagged to a quarter inch, their doggy noses flopping uncontrollably any which way. Still better than nothing. My loving lady is very gracious about it all. I use my belt and the leg of the stool to garrote the neck of the doctor. Look, you little wiener, you're going to give me something that makes the equipment work or I'm going to snap your chicken neck like a twig.
Okay, stop it. I'll tell you.
I loosen the knot a turn. What? What then?
Oh, thank you.
I still have my knee between his shoulder blades ready to twist up a few turns. You can get injections. Penile injections will do the trick. Explain in detail. You have 40 seconds. He does, in detail. Apparently there's a hormone, similar in fact to one's own natural substance, that works like Super Viagra. It absolutely shuts off the return blood flow. Blood flows in, doesn't get out, makes a monster boner. The downside is that, like all these methods, there is no spontaneity. Have to keep the crap frozen in the freezer, make a pretense that you're going for more ice for your drink, then secretly thaw it out, escape to the bathroom to draw it up in a syringe, then grimace as you stab the base of your terrified cock with the needle, fumble with the plunger trying not to stab through the other side or break the needle off in there, finish up and hide all the evidence, finally somehow slip the bottle of hormone back into some inconspicuous place in the freezer behind the peas. At last, my cock begins to tingle and burn. Soon, a fine erection of massive proportion arises from the ashes of my sex life. Hurts a goddamn fair amount, like a combination of strangulation and the hammered thumb sensation, but I don't care. I got the Mondo boner. Now I'm going to chase the beautiful one around the house. I'm back. Can't stop me. I'm ready to poke 40 holes through a mahogany plank. 2 hours later, I'm still hard. Perfect priapism. The lovely one is holding me at bay with a large kitchen knife. Enough is enough. What was fun is now out of hand. I feign from side to side, thinking I might get behind her and have my way again, but she is too quick for me, and the specter of Bobbitt's unit lying in the grassy field looms in my mind. Besides, the damn thing is bright purple and feels like an industrial accident. Reluctantly, I pack it in ice and wait for the relief valve to open a nanometer, draining my vein. All in all, though, a wonderful experience. For those brief hours, I was a man again. I don't care what this gook costs. I want a 55-gallon drum of it. Next time at the doctor's office, with my .357 Magnum pressed tightly against the doctor's temple, I get him to write a lifetime prescription for the stuff. But it would be nice to be free of such mechanical manipulations. Surely they are better than nothing at all. I consider myself the luckiest man in the post-prostate world to have my wonderful woman, apparently not judgmental, willing to accept me in a semi-android condition. But I can't help but wonder, worry. How long will she put up with these shenanigans? What is the depth of love? How, as half a man, can I compete with the clear-eyed cowboys around me, so full of the saddle, the sage, the seed? Only with the cleverness of an intellect they can never have do I have any advantage.
To do what is necessary to bring our family together to safety and freedom.
If we all come out of this safely and alive, then it will be a miracle. My time in married, and my time as a mother, and my time in prison that I've become more of a Belle than an Ariel.
Even though we don't have Caitlin quite home yet, knowing that she's out of the Connie Network's hands is just really inspiring and invigorating. It's just it's good news all around for us.
The president actually hinted last night when he was speaking, in fact, that something very interesting was in the works and was about to come to light. Have a listen to what he had to say.
One of my generals came in, they said, you know, I have to tell you, a year ago they would have never done that. It was a great sign of respect. You'll probably be hearing about it over the next few days. But this is a country that did not respect us. This is a country that respects us now. The world is starting to respect us again, believe me.
The president there, referring to Pakistan, he knew at the time he was speaking that Pakistan had moved on the intelligence and was, in fact, able to rescue this family. Now,
so back to Raymond Sollard, Acid Journals, 20 Years of Tripping. Next day, afternoon, they're out getting bagels and movies to rent, and I'm here listening to sad classical music, Beethoven, I think, and seeing if I can still write, and I think I can, though not very well at the moment. Rick was reading some Dylan Thomas poetry earlier, very sad, very holy music. My tears are like the quiet drift of petals from some magic rose, and all my grief flows from the rift of unremembered skies and snows. I think that if I touched the earth, it would crumble. It is so sad and beautiful, so tremulously like a dream. I've stepped through the door, finally, and lastly, and there isn't any going back, even if I wish to. It's confirmed. Tripping, laughing, talking, it's all okay. Now the music is sprightly and beautiful. Thinking also about art and discipline and devotion and gift and tenacity. To Hartley, ground that is never absent, to wishing lips, enough surprise to console 3 a.m.'s dark prayer, the sadness you keep after a moment of crowded woe, the will to meet eyes and hope for bells your glance provokes. Absent God, absent lover, absent mother, worse, present all at once. Art, the horn cleaved in your heart as you dangle in reddening darkness. Drugs, pens, sex, music, books, movies, pictures. What else? God, death. Tripping and needing all of today to land, knowing that one's obsessions, like an old coat, necessary, ugly, all you've got, really. A few days later, near midnight, bench in Copley Square near Boston Public Library, the insanely tall and weirdly blue Hancock Tower, the pretty old Trinity Church, worrying about amounting to not much. All is well and divine. I'm trying. Mine is a sloppily contrived life, whose only solid hope lies in art. I'll be gone from my bookseller job soon. 3+ years of working there amounting only to paying my rent and bills every month. I'll be a graduate student again this fall, this time at Emerson College, this time MFA in creative writing. Can I do this? Taking acid showed me that art is illusion, but I have decided I do not believe this. Acid is a path. Art is a path. You see, art has been and is my only hope, not love or religion or money or even friendship. Beyond all these for me is art. Beyond art is silence and annihilation. I choose life. I choose art. Dropping acid disturbed me deeply, but that's okay. I go on and may take acid again if I have the chance. Now, Colonel Street, oft-enjoyed steps of defunct Rome Tech building. Years, me living in Zombie Town, Massachusetts. Old factory town just north of Boston, poorer than the towns nearby, like Milk Rose. Street lit up by many street lamps, their strange humming. The night is mild and peaceful. Me coming to the usual conclusions. Art is sacred. Art is all. Art is the path. Art is the means. Art is the destination. Cars pass by once in a while. at peace right now to reflect, to appreciate the pine tree near these steps, to enjoy the mild air. I'm 13 again, delivering newspapers before dawn. All is well and divine. Thank you.